Welcome to Bronson Modern Gods. I'm John, and this guy right here is Richard. What's up, buddy?
Hi. Hey, John. I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. We are into November now. It's dark outside already, which is, you know.
It gets dark in California? I didn't know that.
Sometimes there must be dark before there is dawn, and this is one of those things. Hey, if you are not following us on Instagram and Facebook, why not? See, it's right up there now. Bronze and Modern Gods, real easy to find us. Go check out our website, bronzeandmoderngods.com, if you like. Give us a like and a subscribe on this platform if you're watching us on YouTube, because it really helps with the algorithm, and we love you for it. And if you would listen to us on your favorite podcast platform, why don't you leave us a review there as well, because we like reading them, and we like reading them on the air in our viewer mail. Today's topic is a hot one because everyone is going nuts for newsstand versions. Newsstand versus the direct market versions. What is the difference? Why are they more expensive? Should they be more expensive? We're going to dive into it today for sure. But first, let's take a look at our hot book of the week. Richard, this one is in your wheelhouse. It's all about you, buddy.
Yeah, it is finally the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, The Last Ronin. This book has been long coming. I've had this book on order for months. We had a situation where an ash can came out of for this book months ago, stirred up some interest. People got really excited about it. But then the original publisher decided that the artwork for this book was not up to snuff. So they went through and decided to redo the whole book. So the book went back to the drawing board. They got a new artist, redrew the whole book. Book was finally coming out again. And then we had a whole situation where we did not, the individual stores did not get their original allocation of these books.
Well, I will say in Southern California, we saw a split. What was strange that I saw, because I went to a few places on Wednesday, the bigger stores were sold out, but the smaller stores that had a tinier customer base still had plenty of copies on the shelves. Even the 1 in 10 were still on the shelf as of yesterday. Yeah.
Here locally, we had kind of a different situation. They were gone everywhere. Fortunately, I had one in my pull list. So my LCS held one for me, but they were, by the end of Wednesday, they were gone. So definitely, there's a lot of hype around this book because of the apparent shortage of copies available. They're already talking about putting out a second print of this book, which, you know, people want the first print. And so I'm not exactly sure how that new second cover. Print is. It's just a different color of the sun / moon, whatever that orb is in the sky. But, you know, raw copies of the first print are going from $25 to $30. They were going for that, you know, right out the gate for this book. This is one of those books that it is an oversized book and it's square bound and it is subject to all kinds of mishandling, from ding corners to fingerprints to just general problems that Diamond introduces as they're packing them. So it's going to be tough for this black cover, for the A cover, to come up with 9.8s out of the books that are available. So I expect to see the 9.8s having a higher ratio price assigned to them than you would normally expect for a new book.
Yeah, according to a few of my retailer sources, the shipping from Diamond on this was abominable. They received just so many damaged copies. First, they were allocated from their original orders, and then those allocations were damaged. So if you've got a nice one, yeah, take a look at it. There's also apparently a printer's error in about 10% of the run. Have you heard about that?
Yeah, certain pages in the book are kind of they're faded out. They're whiter than they should be. It will be interesting if we could find out exactly what the ratio is. I wasn't aware that it was as high as 10%. So that's going to introduce a potential another vector for collecting for this book. Personally, I don't care for error prints as a speculation source, mainly because it's hard to quantify them as opposed to being able to have a solid print run of a particular title. You never really know how much how many are out there that you're competing with?
And let's talk about the variants. Crazy. First, you've got the standard ratio variants. There's a 1 in 10, a 1 in 25, and a 1 in 75. Thank you, retailer variant. But what else do we have going on variant-wise with this book?
There are some really cool variants. Back months ago when this book was first on order, I ordered one that is a homage to the Usagi Yojimbo cover for Albedo number 2. It's one of the turtles standing there with that yellow light coming through the window frames. It looks really good. And there's another variant that is very related to that where instead of having the picture perfect house, the window that they're looking through, it's this broken down, damaged version of it with the turtle standing there with a red background. It's kind of like the apocalyptic version of that scene. So those are my two personal favorites out of the 70 different variants there are for this. It's tough to see them all. A lot of these variants have small print runs, 500, 200, 300 print runs, which, you know, you and I have talked about how I'm not really sure how the publisher gets value out of these, but they're out there. So there's a number of these smaller print run books. The story is good. So I'm very interested in reading the rest of it to find out what happens to this. He was unnamed until the very last panel in the book. So you get to find out which brother. I expected them to hold that off for a while, but no, it's a good book. The number of print the number of variants though makes this one really difficult to collect if you're trying to go broad. And my recommendation is stick with the A cover if you can. I think that's where the real value is going to be. The one in 75, I think, is going to be strong. But the rest of them, I'm not really sure if we're going to look back in a year from now and see the value in a lot of these.
I know a lot of retailers did not even get their 1 in 75s. I'm hearing that as well. So maybe those will arrive this week. But I did see some instantaneous sales on eBay of the 1 in 75 for $3.99. A couple of best offers starting at $3.99. So I'm not quite sure what the end sale actually was. Mm-hmm. But one to keep an eye on for sure. I mean, there was just no debate this week over what the hot book of the week was going to be, was there?
No. I question the choice to make this oversized. It is a good homage to the original books, which were also oversized, but it makes them a difficult to. I had to put mine in a magazine backing board, for example, which means that they don't fit in my short boxes. So they have to go into the deviant corner with my original Turtle books and Love and Rockets and things like that. So I'm not really sure why they went that route.
My LCS sold them pre-bagged, so I wonder what he used. I'll have to look. Maybe they were Golden Age bags. Maybe they fit in a Golden Age bag because they weren't magazine bags because they were fairly snug. So, okay, we'll have to take a look at that. Speaking of LCS's comic shops, the birth of the direct market, our main topic for today, newsstand versions versus direct market versions, a short history, hopefully short. We're going to dive right into it. Now, I don't think it's a surprise to anyone here to tell you that comics were traditionally sold via newsstands. And what you might not know was back in the 60s and 70s and 50s, you were a newsstand. You got a certain bundle of comic books. You put them out on the shelf. After the next month's shipment arrived, you then took the previous months and you returned them to the distributor. You would strip the logo off or rip the cover off to make sure it couldn't be resold, and you sold it or you returned it back to the distributor, and then they were destroyed. Now, does this sound like the most efficient method of distribution you returned?
Absolutely not. I could just imagine all those Hulk 181s being shipped back and throw it into the incinerator. That's
crazy. And to be profitable and to have a book that was profitable, you had to have what they called a certain sell-through rate. And an acceptable, not a good, but an acceptable sell-through rate was 34% of your print run. Now, what that means is if you printed, 200,000 copies of a comic book, you had to sell at least 72,000 of those to stay in business. And the rest went back. I think I'm doing my math right. The rest went back and were destroyed. Now, this was okay when comics were selling hundreds and thousands and millions in the 60s and even the early 70s. But around the mid 70s, it became to be a problem. They were only 30 cents, 35 cents. Retailers, newsstands were not making a big margin on these things. And they took up a lot of space. So why would you carry these 30-cent pamphlets when you can carry Time Magazine for 75 cents or even Mad Magazine for 50 cents? The margin's much better. You make more money. So the newsstand distribution system was drying up. It was in real danger. There were some experimentations in the mid-70s with selling directly to comic book dealers. Like Phil Suling was a major innovator in this area. He cut a deal directly with Marvel to have Marvel sell him books, and then he sold them to probably about 100 comic book shops that existed across the country in the mid-70s. But the birth of the true direct sales market is pretty much commonly accepted to be in July 1979, when Marvel started providing their own distribution deals direct to retailers. You didn't have to go through Phil anymore. You could go through several different distributors. And they had to differentiate these because they didn't want people returning them. They were non-returnable. So if you bought your books direct from Marvel, you kept what you ordered. To prevent people from returning them, they changed the black plate during the printing of the book to reflect this black diamond in the number square. Now, they also didn't want people stripping off the top. There goes the black diamond. Okay, I'm going to return it because you can't tell if it's a newsstand or not. So they have the black strike through the UPC as well, because no comic shops at that time had any kind of computerized scanning equipment or inventory. So they're like, nah, they don't need a UPC. So it was a way to make sure these were non-returnable. So this was pretty successful right from the start. Jim Shooter has said at least 6% of the total run of Uncanny X-Men at that time were going directly to comic shops. And that's what kept that title alive and growing, was the direct sales route. It was so successful that it eventually led to direct only comics. The first one for DC was a Superboy Spectacular in 1980, and that was soon followed up by, what do you think the first direct sales Marvel book was?
Dazzler number one.
Dazzler number one, 480,000 copies, non-returnable.
Wow.
So Dazzler number one, probably why it's not a $300, $400 book right now. There's plenty out there, folks. But Dazzler number one was the first direct sales Marvel title. So what ended up happening on the rest of the titles that went to the newsstand and the ones that went direct to shops, you had two different versions. You had the newsstand with the normal number box, and you had the UPC on that. And then you had the direct version. At first, the direct version was actually the scarcer of the two, because there were far more newsstands than there were comic book shops in 1979. But that would flip around pretty quickly. There's a great site. Chuck Rosansky from Mile High Comics has an awesome blog from a few years ago where he details his part in creating the direct sales market with Marvel directly. And he has some stats and some really cool stuff. There'll be a link in the description if you really want to do a deep dive. But in 1979, the direct market accounted just for 2% of Marvel sales. So what does this mean?
That means that back then, the directs were the rare books. And if you were looking to collect the rare print, it would be the direct.
I think the first direct sales X-Men was number 129, First Kitty Pride, right? Is that First Kitty Pride? If you have a direct sales version of 129, you have something that's 2% of that print run. So this whole thing about the newsstand version is automatically worth more, that seems very arbitrary. You have to kind of look at the sliding scale of the years. Now, it seems like 1985 was the inflection point, because by 1985, 50% of the sales were from direct sales. So you kind of have an even split. But then you go into the 90s, you go into the 2000s. And it gets smaller and smaller. And Marvel stopped newsstand distribution completely in 2013. When did Ultimate Fallout 4 come out?
2011.
So you see why it's so scarce as a newsstand edition. DC actually held out their newsstand distribution to stores like Books A Million and Barnes & Noble all the way to 2017. So I would say some of these later DC newsstands are super scarce. And if you saw on Instagram earlier this week, we actually shared a letter from the fanzine, The Comic Reader, from 1983, where this really prescient soothsayer, I call him, predicted the future. He said, in response to George Olshevsky's letter about the Curtis Logo comics, which was the newsstand distribution, Curtis Logo was their distributor, and non-Curtis Logo comics, I have to favor his arguments about the direct sales editions being worth less years from now. Whenever I can, I buy doubles off the newsstand instead of ordering them from the direct sales. I, too, am afraid, for the very reason stated in Olshevsky's letter, that someone will make a distinction between the two whenever it becomes marketable to do so.
Wow. That's a guy thinking ahead. That is awesome.
I will meet him, and I want to buy his collection right now.
That's right. Definitely. Definitely. I wish I could be that prescient and planning in my collecting.
And while we got him on the phone, can we ask him what's going to happen in 2021? I mean, you know, the guy's actually brilliant. What's up, Kreskin?
Wow. Kreskin? Really?
I'm here to deliver all the references the kids will get.
Wow.
Now, we're telling you all this because we see Amazing Spider-Man 300, newsstand edition, $5,000 or whatever it's selling for. There's the reason why. It was a much lower percentage of the print run, genuinely, by 1988, 1987. So the thing that drives me nuts, and Richard, and I know you've seen this too, and you see me comment it on it every time during a live sell, I can't help myself, is when someone holds up a book from like 1975, like, or 76, like say Eternals number one is the best example, because I keep hearing people say this. They'll have an Eternals number one and they'll say it's, you know, $300, newsstand variant. It's the only version. There's no direct version. Stop it.
Right. People pick up on those buzzwords and try to use it as marketing terms, I think, without actually understanding what they're talking about. So that's unfortunate that people are using that to describe a book.
But it's really interesting to see this newsstand incentive, this newsstand premium for some of these books. I was never a big proponent of it. I was like, the book's the book. It's a black plate change. Get over it. But now I see the market is heading that way, and you kind of have to accept it.
You do. I'm like you. I honestly collect the book, right? I don't know if newsstands as a premium is something that's a temporary thing. And in 3 years, we won't care about it as a community as much as we do now. Right now, we're looking for differentiators. And that barcode versus the direct, you know, face in that same box is a differentiator that people can use to inflate the value of a book. And you know, potentially it is a more rare book because of the limited distribution of newsstands. But it's arbitrary. And I mean, it's still Amazing Spider-Man 300, whatever is in that box, right? So I just have a hard time thinking that in 5 years, it's going to be as big of a deal as it is right now. There are a lot of people who are just bored and are looking for those kinds of things to focus on. In 5 years, you know, after we've had the apocalypse and the Civil War, yeah, potentially this won't be a point that people use to differentiate the books. So me, I still buy the directs. I consider the newsstand as something that I'm really willing to pay a premium for when I'm buying new books.
I think it depends. I think it's going to be a sliding scale. I think we're at the early days of really breaking out these premium prices. And I'll give you an example from your own collection. You may not care to have a Spider-Man 238 newsstand edition for a Hobgoblin. The direct one's fine for you, right? Mm-hmm. But who bought an Ultimate Fallout 4 newsstand edition?
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. That was a purchase made because I am a completionist.
Yeah.
And I wanted to have all the different versions of the book. It just happened to be that the newsstand had a higher price associated with it. I didn't buy it because it was a newsstand. I bought it because I have all the other versions of the book, not that particular version.
Yeah, I think, you know, in my opinion, and it's just me and my collecting focus, anything before 1990, newsstand is not that tough. 90 on, I mean, things like Spawn number one, newsstand, that's strangely tough to find. You know, you had some independent comics that made it to the newsstand that nobody really cares about now, like Now Comics. They had newsstand distribution, and those, when you find a Ralph Snart number one with the UPC, that's kind of fun for me. Married with Children number one, you know, stuff like that. First Comics had newsstand distribution for a while. Nobody gives a crap.
Yeah. I have a hard time seeing the hobby embracing this as a strong enough differentiator for it to last for the long play.
Yeah, when you get into the 90s, they're even more scarce, especially around 95 forward. Wait, 1995? Richard, that was 25 years ago. Was that time for the 25-year rule?
Master of segues.
Yes, the 25-year rule, where we go back 25 years to 1995. Grunge is happening. I think I say that every time. Oh, I got to come up with something new from 1995. But trust me, grunge was happening. And we're going to go look at some of the books that were overlooked back then, or things that you can still get to kind of whip up that nostalgia again in your life. The book that we're going to focus on this week is a strange one that I bought back in the day, and it really appealed to me, and that is Skrull Kill Crew number one. What?
Okay, I am not familiar with this book, but I see people that are associated with it, like Grant Morrison and Mark Millar, that I find intriguing.
I was the biggest Grant Morrison fan back then. I loved Doom Patrol. I loved Animal Man. And then he left those books and he was kind of scouting around for other things to do. And he kind of hit Marvel up and he said, hey, I've got this crazy idea for a series called Skrull Kill Crew. He and Mark Millar wrote this. It was supposed to be an ongoing series. It kind of got truncated to 5 issues when the sales reports came in. But if you remember all the way back in Fantastic Four number 2, where the Skrulls first appeared, Reed Richards came up with a real cool method to get rid of them. Do you remember what that was, Richard?
Yes, he turned them into cows.
He made them turn themselves into
That's
cows.
That's true. He made them turn themselves into cows. You're right.
And then he hypnotized them and said, you are happy and content like a cow, and you will remain a cow forever. Yeah. Well, what ends up happening to cows is they go to slaughter. So eventually, these Skrull cows went to slaughter, became processed meat products, and some humans that ate the Skrull meat developed Skrull-like shape-shifting powers, and the best part, an irrational hatred of Skrulls. That's the concept for this book.
Wow.
So they get together as kind of like a biker or superpower biker gang and call themselves the Skrull Kill Crew. What you'll really appreciate, Richard, was the original title of the book that Marvel made them change, which was the Skrull Kill Cult.
Sorry, that's play on Thrill Kill Cult.
Exactly. They were gonna do it. And they made him change it. The famous industrial band Thrill Kill Cult, My Life with the Thrill Kill Cult. And so it was just as crazy as I'm describing it. Captain America guest starred. The front cover of issue 2 says guest starring Captain America, whether he likes it or not. It was kind of very tongue-in-cheek, very humorous, and very underrated. Nobody, you know, really gave it a shot. It's been reprinted in a trade paperback since. If you can grab it, I highly recommend it. But you don't need the trade paperback because this book is super cheap. It's tough to get in high grade. This was ordered very lightly at the bottom of the comic book market in 1995. So you can imagine how many copies are floating around still. But it has been optioned for TV back in 2006. Obviously, that never happened. And they revived it for another miniseries during all that Secret Invasion hoo-ha with Marvel around 2008. So it is a not completely dead property.
Yeah, I love the tie-in with Fantastic Four number two. That is a great reaching back through Marvel history. That's awesome.
It's crazy. So if you happen to see it in the dollar bins, please grab Skrull Kill Crew. You'll love it. Issue five. If you see issue five, just grab it because it's so hard to find and so low order. Just get it while you see it. All right. So that's one underrated book from 1995. And the segues continue as we head to our underrated books of the week. Richard, why don't you start us off?
Okay, I'm going to pick a book that has been circling around, and it's been out there for, this is a 2016 book. It's Howard the Duck, number one. Now, this is not the original Howard the Duck from the 70s, which is a book from my childhood. I love those stories, and I was really interested in reading the more recent uptake on his strange adventures. So Howard the Duck, number one, is also the first appearance of a character that I see a lot of potential in the Marvel Universe, and that person is Gwenpool. That's the combination of Deadpool and Spider-Gwen, or Gwen Stacy, in this irreverent female version of Deadpool's breaking the fourth wall kind of character. And that plays a lot into with Howard the Duck in general. I've always called Howard the Duck as a meta character. He comes from another universe or another part of the multiverse, and he's been thrown here on Earth. He's a talking duck, and he has adventures that you would think a talking duck would have. So this book is it's been always in the background. I can't ever call this a cold book because the first appearance of Spider-Gwen, Gwenpool has always had some low rumblings to it. But recently there has been a high sale for the Lim variant cover of Ron Lim variant cover of this book, where we have Gwenpool on the cover. She's actually on the cover of the variant. She's not on the cover of the A cover at all. And she's holding a sword, and she's got pinned one of a villain to the wall. And it's a great cover. It's had a recent raw sale of over $400 for this.
Wow. Book.
Yeah, it's amazing. The graded books are also impressive. The CGC 9.8, according to the GPA, is $722. So there's a lot of heat after that particular variant, I think because of her appearance on the cover. Her first appearance on the cover was a part of Deadpool's Secret Wars number two. It's a great cover. If you're out there, it's also still out there and available at a more reasonable price. But for number one, there are a number of covers. If you can't afford the $400 for that cover for a raw, I think it's going to continue to go up. You can get the one, the A cover, 9.8 for it is only $83. Mm-hmm. But there's also Ron Lim's did a sketch version, which is a second print of this book. And the sketch cover is exactly the same as the Ron Lim cover where she's holding the sword that, you know, just had the $400 raw sale. But it's much, much more affordable. It's just a sketch version of that. So it's got a 9.8, CGC 9.8 of $153. If you go on eBay, you can find them for around that price. You can negotiate a little bit lower. But I see as that Lim cover continues to go up, it's going to raise the value of all versions of this book. There are some other variants of this book too, but I'm focusing on the ones that are focused around Gwenpool on the cover. But it's to me, I buy. This is one of those books that if I'm leafing through a box and I see it available for $5, I'll pick it up every single time. I'm talking about the A cover. Mm-hmm. If you see any of the variant covers, pick them up because I think they all have some value, but especially those Lim covers. Those are going to be the ones that are going to over time have the greatest potential in increasing in value. But yeah, this is like I said, this has always been a book that's kind of floating around whether or not Gwenpool is is viable. So it's had value, but it's all, but it's still affordable. And I think personally, it's a great read. It's very tongue in cheek. It's got some good cameos from people like Dr. Strange. So it's definitely worth picking up if you come across it, just to read it and see if you like this version of Howard the Duck.
Well, you know, I'm a huge Howard the Duck fan too. You've seen me wear this shirt on the podcast. You've heard me talk about it before. So of course I have a copy of this. And she is kind of on cover A, just a little headshot of baby Gwenpool headshot. And by the way, just as an aside, 9.0, because this is before I started pressing moderns. So lesson learned, because if you look back here, you can see the big thumb indentation right here that's easily pressed out. So this is going to be a crack and resub, because I want my Howard the Duck number one from 2016 with the first appearance of Gwenpool to look beautiful. And see, I'm going to echo your comments about the story. Chip Zdarsky, I believe that's how you say his name, is the best writer for Howard the Duck since Steve Gerber. There, I said it. There. I'm going to stand by it.
Yep.
All right. My book this week for underrated book of the week is, again, we kind of alluded to this magazine earlier when I mentioned the letter that was written to the Comic Reader. Well, the one I'm going to talk about today is the Comic Reader issue number 212. This was a comic book fanzine, kind of like the previews of its day. It listed all the coming comics from DC, Marvel, Whitman, Charlton, whoever. So as part of that coming attractions, it is the first actual printed appearance of Beta Ray Bill from 4337. If you look at the screen grab here, you can see it. There it is, a nice little stat of the cover of Thor 337 announcing it's coming in a couple of months. I don't know how you feel about these types of books, Richard. I'm on the fence with these true first appearance things.
Yeah, but you know, we had the same thing with Miles Morales in Previews 95, where he shows up on the cover of that book. That's a little bit more substantial than the little thumbnail that you get here for Thor 337. I just don't buy into it. I don't collect comic or books about comic books. I collect comic books. So to me, the first appearance for Beta Ray Bill is Thor 337, not this little thumbnail.
Yeah, I'm kind of with you, but we're seeing movement on the market for these books. Like there's an issue of the Comic Reader. I can't think of the issue offhand, but it's the first cover appearance of Moon Knight, because they have a big cover shot of Moon Knight before Marvel Spotlight 28 came out. There is that Wolverine picture that's in the house ads in some of those Marvel titles before Incredible Hulk 181 came out. So sure, we may feel a certain way. The market feels differently. This is a tough newsprint fanzine. It was printed completely on newsprint, including the cover. So high grades are scarce right now. There's only one CGC 9.8 on the census, and that copy is currently on eBay with a $1,000 buy it now price. So
sure, I'm sure there's people that collect this, and I'm not gainsaying that this is a valuable book. I'm just saying that I don't consider it a comic book. Other people may have different things for their collections, and that's perfectly viable. Just like I think there's an issue of Foom that has a cover that has the first X-Men appearance. Those are great historical pieces of art to collect, but I don't consider them to be the first appearance, because it is not a comic book, which is what I collect.
What do you guys think? Let us know in the comments. Hit us up on Instagram. Tag us. Follow us on Instagram and Facebook. Do you like these kind of books? Do you hate them? Do you have no feelings about them until you buy one and you go, okay, they're great. I do like them.
I do have to say, I do have a Previews 95. Just me. I have to come clean. I do have one. But it's because it was a novelty. Ooh, look at this. Here's a cover of Miles, and I bought it back when it was $50.
Hey,
and I thought that was a lot. But the thing is, also, I know that out there somewhere on the back shelf of some dusty old warehouse, there is a case of these you know, the previews 95 just sitting there, pristine, waiting to be discovered.
Why do you think that? Because these were non-returnable, direct market.
Yeah, but these are preview books, right? Now for the comic readers, I know you've been personally collecting these, right?
If you follow us on, you always see me posting little snippets from these old fanzines. I love them because it takes me back to the very first comic book store I ever went to in Elyria, Ohio, Mr. Fantasies, and he had the comic reader, and I was like, it's a magazine about comics and just comics. What? There's no internet, kids. It was your only source of news. It was your only source to find out what was coming out. It felt so special that you knew what was going to happen in Captain America 2 months from now, and your friends did not. So I love these things. And yeah, I've been buying them up, and I'll give you a little buyer's tip. If you really want this comic reader 212 for some reason, don't search for comic reader number 212 on eBay. Search for the comic reader lot, and you'll find them in a lot of like 20, 30 books. That's how I got mine. It's mint.
That's a great secret. If you're looking for a particular issue of a book that is a little obscure, you may have trouble finding it on the internet by looking for it specifically. But if you look for a collection of those, of that title, you may find it within that collection.
There are several up on eBay now for 40, 50 bucks, but I will tell you guys, since I got mine, I found it on eBay last week by searching comic reader a lot, and I paid 50 bucks for it for a lot of 29 issues. So there are bargains to be had out there. And with that, we're going to leave you. Make sure you follow us on Facebook and Instagram. Leave some comments, hit that like button, subscribe to us. We love you guys, and we will see you next time. Thanks, Richard.
Thanks, everybody. Stay safe.